to Forge the Narrative.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul Murphy, your host. I'm joined tonight by Adam Camilleri.
Hello, everybody. It's me. I'm here.
And
hello.
Red Powell.
Hello.
We are the Battle of Lost Souls podcast. Thank you for joining us. We have a lot to cover on this show. So we're going to talk about a recent article on the Warhammer community site that says, was it list like the top 9 Marine killers?
Yeah, bold of them.
We've got something to say about that. After we talk about that, we're going to give you another Adam Camilleri rant special.
Sisters was the request this week, so strap yourself in for some battle nuns.
We're doing it, and actually, I've been on like a rabbit hole of nerd documentaries, and I want to talk a little bit about one. And we've got an incredibly special announcement to make that we're going to be helping out with the Nova Open Charitable Foundation, and they have raffles going on. You've heard us talk about it on the show before. I'm going to make a plea for you to get some raffle tickets if there's some models that jump out to you and then something that you can do, and to come watch us on the live stream September 12th.
Yeah, really excited to be a part of that. It's an amazing initiative that they do year in, year out. And unfortunately, due to the state of the world, it's something that's been put on the back burner just due to sheer necessity. But I'm excited to be a part of it.
Yeah, well, we'll talk about that after the break and how you can participate if it's something you're interested in doing and are able to do. But we're really excited to be a part of it. And, you know, thanks to them for letting us pitch in how we can. We're going to have a cool mixture of live stuff, pre-recorded stuff, bonuses. I mean, it's going to be awesome.
It sounds like it's going to be a really well-rounded fiesta for your eyes and ears. Unfortunately, you know, you can't, you know, walk up and shake a hand or anything, but this is the best we can do under the circumstances.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I mean, this is, you know, we're going to create a virtual lounge. It's going to be awesome. So we'll get back to that, but let's talk about this. So on the Warhammer community site, I think it was a couple days ago at this point, the top 9 Space Marine killers. Now, I'm going to put a small caveat on this. I know articles like this are like intended to start discussions like we're about to have, where we get to debate the minutiae of things.
Thought-provoking. They're supposed to be thought-provoking, yeah.
And whether or not we agree with some of these choices. And let's just jump right into it. So they've got, I don't know if these are listed in a particular order or if they're just listed, you know, in just...
Let's hope not, because I think they got the first one, the best one first, in my opinion, of the ones they've listed, at least.
It is listed as number one, and so maybe we should... No, we have to go in reverse order, or sorry, in top-down, but we're also... Look, we don't agree with all these choices, so I don't think it matters what order we read them in.
No, we don't.
So we got the Exocrine as number one.
Have you guys ever played against... have you recently played against an Exocrine?
I have not.
Whether I'm Space Marines or not, I definitely give them some pretty significant concern in a lot of cases.
I've not played with them against them in 9th edition, but I did play with them against them quite a few times in the tail end of 8th edition after they got their big Psychic Awakening buff. Because they were literally the model from the Tyranid Psychic Awakening. They went from mediocre to bonkers.
Yeah, they did.
They were an outlier. And maybe you sprinkled one in a specific meta if you had trouble with a specific matchup. But now you're just like, it's a freaking staple unit now. And you're never going to not want to take it. And man, it's terrifying. You're absolutely right, Red. Like, it doesn't matter what you're playing against. Exocrine is like, you need to respect that model.
That's right.
Tyranids, I think that if we all embraced power level, Tyranids would have been like a juggernaut of armies. Because, I mean, like all of their stuff is, you know, their upgrades. They don't affect the power level really for them. I mean, or mm-hmm. one more power level or whatever. And so that maybe that was under consideration when this book was written, because it's really old, I think.
The Tyranid Codex.
Yeah, the Tyranid Codex.
Yeah, it was in the first, I think it was in the first 9 months of 8th edition. It was one of the first, it wasn't one of the like the first 5, but I think it was shortly after there.
And the Exocrine, like you mentioned, has just got a huge power bump with the stratagems or whatever, and the fact that it is damage 2 and shoot into combat, fire twice. I mean, the thing is obnoxiously powerful.
It's on top of that, it's really defensive as well. You can put catalyst on it. It's got toughness 8. You can make it have cover or maybe -1 to hit from a couple of different sources. It's got a lot going for it on every level.
But so then we go to number 2, the Helldrake.
They went from, hey, this article might know what it's talking about, to, oh man, I'm not quite sure you guys know
what
you're talking about.
I mean, okay, so they're on the right track because it does have damage 2.
Yeah, that's
true. It does have damage 2. That is correct.
And, you know, in right now, you know, with, we know the Firstborn are getting two wounds, but right now the Primaris are two wounds, and there's a lot of them. You're going to see a ton of Primaris on the table.
Mm, that's true.
So I do think it's like, you know, and we talked about the Star Cannons or whatever. Like, I think in this slot, I would much rather see a Wave Serpent with Star Cannons.
Yeah. Sure.
Warwalkers. Really anything.
Dark Reapers? Shining Spears?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, Red.
No, absolutely. I think you're right. Like, I mean, Star Cannons, Warwalkers with Star Cannons, I mean, Wraith Lords with Star Cannons, Dark Reapers, the Shining Spears, maybe, you know, just because they got to get close enough to them. But I totally agree with Dark Reapers in that regard. Mm. That, I mean, it's that multiple damage, right, that you want to be able to chew into them. If you wanted to put an Eldar unit in this spot, like, there's definitely options. It's just that the Helldrake is great for an early assault unit that can disrupt, you know, it can get up there very rapidly. It can launch itself into the lines. It can get there. But I'm just afraid against Space Marines, it just doesn't, it can't cut through them. And once it gets there, it's really exposed itself. And so then what?
I think you hit the nail on the head there when you said it's a disruption unit. Like, you think about somebody's, you're a Chaos, you know, Chaos Space Marines army, and you're playing into just like your average bog standard Tau army or AdMech gun line, and you need to make them shift. You need to make them move from their bubble. Like, first turn, a Helldrake can close whatever gap there is on these smaller tables and get a significant charge off on something
30 inch
problematic for you.
30, yeah. 30, so in a vacuum of you're going first, they're within 30 inches. I mean, the Bellflamer and the Hades Autocannon are both damage 2 weapons.
Mm. Yep.
So it's just any way you go with this, you are getting a D2.
I wish it had like a double shoot function. Like, if you moved 15 instead of 30, like a Lehman Russ or something, you could shoot it twice. Because then you'd have some kind of damage where you'd think, okay, this is okay. This is reasonable. But I feel like this should have been taken up by, say, a Defiler or what's the non-Maul Fiend? The other...
The Forge Fiend. Yeah.
The Forge Fiend. Because they're strength 8, minus 1, flat 2 damage. And they've got like 8 Hades Autocannon shots. And they shred. And they're actually looking legitimate. Like, you back them up with a couple of different buffs. You can give them better, enhance the invulns, give them plus 1 hit from the Lord Discos and Prescience and things like that. They're looking a lot more respectable now. And I'd say they are hands down a better Marine Killer than a Helldrake.
Craft Worlds are like, I don't know, they're like shamefully absent from this list.
That's true. That's very true. And as we know, like, over maybe not last edition, but in editions gone by, Eldar was the check on a lot of the Imperium factions. Well, Eldar was the benchmark for everybody's faction, really.
They've always been Marine Killers. I mean, like, they're just
exactly right.
And maybe they aren't. Maybe I'm resting off of, you know, preconceived notions or whatever. But like, Warwalkers with Star Cannons, I don't know, makes me feel a lot better in this.
The other one that's jumping out to me is Bloodletters. Bloodletters are flat 2 damage on 6s to wound, yeah?
I'd have to double. Hold on. I'm going to use this nifty app.
Still getting mileage out of that joke, boys.
I can't stop.
No, but
man.
No one heard the joke. That was in the episode we didn't get to release.
Oh, the dark episode.
They just get they get the lesser versions. Ricky like had a go at me for like 10 minutes for not having the app yet. It was great.
Yes.
And every other time we made a comment, Ricky would somehow refer it back to Adam not having the app.
Because that app is quick. You can get the stuff.
I got it right now. To confirm, yes, any attack with a wound roll of 6 plus for this weapon have a damage characteristic of 2 instead of 1 for the Hellblades. You're absolutely
and
right.
They're power swords.
Yeah, point
they
for
are
point,
power swords.
The Bloodletters would have it in this spot then. Absolutely, yep. Mm.
Yeah, I mean, like, to go on the Eldar kick, there's also, I mean, Dark Eldar, which I know they provide another example, but the Incubi, right?
Oh, yeah.
They've got Marine Killer weapons for sure.
Yeah, what are they? They're plus 1 strength, minus 3 or minus 4, 2 damage, yeah?
I don't know if I can get, but I think they got some love in the Psychic Awakening, didn't they? But I still can't get behind them they're slightly better than a Howling Banshee in my mind.
I think they're considerably better than a Howling Banshee, but I still don't think they're all that amazing.
They're like phantoms. You're not gonna see them on the table.
I wish. They're some of the coolest models that G-Dub's ever done.
They are.
The
Incubi. Agreed.
Either the new ones or the old ones. They're both gorgeous.
True.
Yeah, fair enough.
But I like the Dark Elder one they got here, like a Ravager with all Disintegrators. Fantastic.
Oh, we're done bagging on the Helldrake. We're going to the next one?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
That's the dead horse.
Now, okay, this full disclosure, I have painted 2 Helldrakes, and so I feel like I should get like an achievement medal or whatever.
Yeah.
Because
yeah,
of the trim.
It's called RSI, because the trim took so much out of your wrist.
Yeah.
Dang.
It really is. But so I want them to be really good. And they were. They were actually, you know, they were incredibly good. Man, I would love to explain to you the look on my opponent's face when I had a Helldrake scoot in behind, like, an Icarus Last Cannon or whatever was, the you know, when everyone was taking the gun lines and had the Helldrake go into hover mode or whatever it was called at the time and fire the quad gun across the table to kill something it couldn't get to. That was quickly changed to where you couldn't do that, by the way. But I really enjoyed it when you could. Sorry. Couldn't resist.
You're not sorry.
No, I'm not. I'm not at all. Wrap. So anyway, I want the Helldrake to be cool because I got two sweet green ones, green and gold ones, and that gold. Woo. I think the Helldrake is what spawned the idea that you could paint on trim with Sharpie markers.
Wow, it was, wasn't it? That was the first time I ever heard of it. Or maybe it was... Nah, it would have been them, for sure.
Yeah, because people... Well, the Mauler Fiends and the Helldrakes came out about the same time, and they are just bedazzled. I'm not bedazzled wrong. Baroque. Baroque is all. and then people are like, there has to be a better way. And then that's when we got this whole, hey, have you tried using these Sharpie markers? And it works for some people.
Yeah, it does. Well, it takes... I think it takes... Some people I've talked to, they said it takes a couple of coats, and they won't... The people I know who do it, sometimes they'll do it for edge highlighting. Or maybe they're not using a Sharpie. Maybe they're using a gray lead or whatever, or a pencil. But yeah, the pencil stuff, the pencil tech and the Sharpie tech is an interesting little chestnut that I don't think I've explored fully. Because I think about things like Tempesta Scions, and they've got that kind of Baroque trim that's really hard to get to, especially if you build the model first. If you do it in sub-assemblies, it gets a little bit easier. But they've got this, they're a small model with like small trim. Yeah. And yeah, maybe something of that nature would be just a godsend for some people.
Well, with some of that, I mean, not to take us off in a hobby discussion, but the some people subscribe to the, you know, you spray the whole thing gold or silver or whatever, and then you paint in the flat parts.
Yeah,
man, that's a technique.
You just got to decide what's easier for you.
Mm.
And there's if I had to guess, I've tried both ways. To me, it seems easier and less frustrating to paint the raised parts than to, you know, second. Instead of painting the raised parts first or painting the flat parts second. But that's me. But I've seen people do it both ways. And I think you just have to, however your brain works, do it that way, because the only way to do it is to get through it.
It's true.
So Ravagers. I can get behind the Ravager. I mean, the Ravager is good at killing bodies and it is great at killing vehicles. So, and it's point efficient.
Well, I think actually that's the problem is specifically the points. And it's not so much the points as much as the relative understanding of where the points were from beforehand and where they are now. It's an issue that I think that they have in general with that disintegrator cannons went up so much, and so to have three of them is 75 points. Ravager is 85 points base, and so you're looking at a 160 points, which is essentially a 40 point increase from, or 35 point increase from what they used to be. That's, which kind of hurts.
Yeah,
that percentage wise, that's kind of big.
It's huge. It's actually kind of scary how much they went up. Makes you wonder what the thinking was, where they thought after the Dark Eldar Codex, disintegrators were just like the bee's knees. You needed to kill tanks. More disintegrators. You wanted to kill anything. The answer was still more disintegrators. They were just so good at everything because they had the best pro.
The Ravagers, their utility piece. You can bring them in. You could deep strike them. You know, you can. Yep. I mean, there's. I'm not. Point increases, I know, we're like allergic to them.
Right. Right. It's just something that, to a point, I mean, you know, we've had Scar here before to talk, and it's something that all Dark Eldar players kind of have to swallow. With the new edition for the time being. And so it's just something to accept. But it kind of hurt. But at the same time, don't get me wrong. The weapon is absolutely, I mean, Assault 3, Strength 5, AP minus 3, 2 damage, 36 inches with no, I mean, it was an assault weapon before. So it's definitely a great platform for killing Marines.
Are Scourges maybe a potentially better platform for these instead of the Ravager? I don't know.
So they have other weapons to them. They have like the Melta guns or the shredders. They don't have disintegrator cannons necessarily, but that they could be, they could be, I think the Ravager still has play. I think that it's just maybe we see a rebalancing with some of the weapon points, maybe, as you know, GW has alluded with the changes, because a heavy bolter is strength 5, AP minus 1, 2 damage, you know, heavy 3. Is that really a worthwhile? Are they going to remain at 15 points while the disintegrator's at 25 points? I think that'll be an interesting point to see develop. Is there going to be some kind of rebalancing to weapon points when these new Imperial weapons hit the scene?
Oh, that'd be interesting. Hope so.
We'll see.
Next one on the list is the Demon Prince with the Malefic Talents.
Yep.
This is a bang-on choice.
Absolutely. I'm a huge fan of Demon Princes when they can be applied in the right way. I mean, when you take into effect, you know, a Slaaneshi Demon Prince, for example, who's got, you know, a Slaaneshi detachment nearby who allows him to advance and charge. And then let's say this is a Flawless Host Demon Prince who's generating more attacks. And those Malefic Talons, I mean, he's already putting out that many more attacks. And it just really turns him into a blender. And they're just really efficient. They can cut through Marines quickly that way.
And they can toolbox whatever role you need him to be. If you just want him to sit back behind your lines and bundle in a couple of mortal wounds per turn, they can do that. And they're still very respectable in combat. Or absolutely, you can have them prescienting themselves so they get extra exploding on the Death of the False Emperor. If you're facing against Imperium, you can give them Death Hex so they debuff whatever they're going to charge into. You can just, they're a good toolbox unit.
What they are they got? It's got something like 8 attacks on the charge with
Hateful
Assault, -2, and that's without 2. The other buffs you're talking about, 2 damage apiece.
That's right.
You can give them relics, right? Still, yep. Relic armors, yep. 2 yep. plus
and
armor save.
Veterans of the freaking Long War, so they can that's go right. into Toughness 8, respectively.
Yep.
Yeah, I think the Demon Prince is, I mean, you get a psychic power depending on which alignment you choose. This, if you are you not taking Demon Princes if you play Chaos?
No, you can. I mean, I
not
think
me, but are, I mean, are you ever not really doing it? I mean, I know that there are, I guess, you know, Thousand Suns, but even then you're probably...
I think there's something of an argument maybe between Demon Princes and Disco Lords. They're both kind of pricey in certain regards, but at the same time, they're both really effective, and it's just more of which direction you're going in certain regards. The Disco Lord can't hide, right? It's wounded over that, whereas the Demon Prince can still hide with the character rule. And so it's just kind of where and how, like Adam was saying, that kind of what tool do you really want? And the Demon Princes have a lot of flexibility. Disco Lords have flexibility, but at the same time, they're also a little more exposed. And so you're kind of bouncing back and forth with in certain regards to that.
The Demon Princes, they're very intimidating, if you ask me, because they can kind of creep around, you know, and slingshot somebody up with Warp Time Mortarion, instance, or whatever,
yep.
Magnus, and you're like, that, you know, is a bad dude. And then when he gets into combat, like, oh, he's a support character, and he's got a bazillion attacks.
Right. Yep. And then, I mean, you throw in some of these other mixes, right? Like, I mean, I've always, of course, played Khorne. But when I had my Bloodthirsters and all, I mean, there was, if I brought a Herald or something like that. So in Slaanesh, you know, they've got that Seleski, the combination of a Demon Prince and a Herald. And so he's giving a +1 strength buff, which is putting Demon Princes right at that strength 8 profile. And then you use veterans, like you were saying, Adam, and they're suddenly, you know, strength 8 counting as higher than that, and so they're doubling out things, and I mean, it puts them in a really sweet spot. You bring in an Exalted Champion, allowing them to reroll wounds and whatnot. There's just a lot of good ways to stack a really catastrophic buffs for Chaos units, and Demon Princes are definitely within that sweet spot of being able to apply the right kind of pressure where you need to.
I think you have to take wings on them, though. I don't think you ever want this guy walking.
I can't remember a time I've seen one without them. I know they're out there, but I just haven't seen one in a long time.
Yeah, me either. There's just no reason to.
Yeah.
Mobility is hard to pass up on.
Well, I mean, especially when you're putting them where you want. I mean, you are going to be warp timing somebody at some point. And so
right.
Getting up, I mean, you want them to be in a position where they can always be effective. And they can compete in every single phase as long as they have wings.
Right. Exactly.
Number 5, we're burning through this list. I thought I would find a little bit more umbrage. We'll get there. We'll get to the umbrage. But I can't say anything bad about Mega Knobs with Killsaws.
Yeah, I'm a fan. I like them. I think they're cool. I think they're a fun model with fun rules.
Well, I mean, you know, fun fact, you don't actually have to commit to the weapons with the Mega Knobs. The arms end in pegs that you can complete all the weapon options and then just slot them on. You don't even have to magnet them up. They will, like, snug fit into position. So that's a little bit of modularity with the orcs. And so whatever comes in fashion, like if Power Fist, for instance, become flat 2 damage or better for orcs or whatever, then, you know, and that fits your playstyle better, you don't have to commit to the power saw or the kill saws. Mm.
Is there another, can we think of another orc, any other orc stuff that's got flat 2 damage that's going to be good at clearing marines? I personally, I'm a fan of whichever one of the Rucka Truck Buggy has the rivet gun. I think it's like 8-shot, strength 6, minus 2, 2 damage. That's legit.
What about the tank hammers?
Yeah, they're in combat, yeah? They're flat 3 damage or something.
Oh, you're
they're
talking like about in shooting. I'm sorry. Did you say?
Well, either any. I don't know. Whatever.
Let me look up the... I can't remember what the... What are the tank hammers called? It's not...
Well, there's the tank buster bombs. And then I think there is the tank hammer bomb. So, like, you got the guy with the grenade on a stick.
Yes, the rocket on a stick.
That's so good.
I don't play with those personally. I just... If you could get into combat, then I remember that thing being somewhat... situational. I'll say it's good if you get it in the right situation.
Well, look up bomb squigs as well. I think they're legit. They hit on like a 2+ or something, and they essentially is a flat 3 damage rocket shot is what I remember them as. I might be talking complete whatever, but yeah, that's what my recollection.
So the tank hammer, make a single hit roll when attacking with this weapon. If it hits, inflict D3 mortal wounds on the target. So
that's just sick. Sorry, it's fun.
But it gets worse. Then remove the bearer.
Of course. Well, he's, yeah. What did you think was going to happen to him?
Never mind. I withdraw my take must argument. But why would you want anything other than Mega Knobs? I mean, Mega Knobs really do it all.
It's true.
And they look cool.
And they look really cool. They're really cool models. They do, yeah, they do everything you need. Was it the Morknaut or the Gorknaut? The one with the Gatling. The Gorknaut has the Gatling, yeah? Was that 1 damage or 2 damage? I think it's only 1 damage, isn't it? I keep thinking it's the same as a Riptide Heavy Burst Cannon. But it's not.
The Death Storm Mega Shooter is strength 6, 1 damage. -1.
Yeah,
AP.
-1 damage. Yeah. It's like 18 shots though, isn't it?
Heavy 3d6. Did it go up to okay. I don't know if it's been changed since the codex.
But... I'm incorrect. Never mind me.
Yeah. No. I mean, so as far as like marine killers go, I don't think you can go too wrong with Ludus still either.
Sure. True. Yeah, Ludus. Yeah, that's really a good orc option for sure in that regard.
Yeah, but I don't know, but I think that we were discussing a little bit in the pre-show about how some of these choices maybe could have been made in a vacuum.
Right. Yeah, you know, just looking at them as it is, yeah.
Yeah, who goes first? What's the terrain looking like? You know, all those things matter. And I think it's easier for the looters to be out of position or removed before they become a threat than it is for a Meganop to be removed.
That's true. That's true. But on the inverse, if you have both of these units in reserve, one of them comes down and adds value straight away. One of them comes down and has to make a 9-inch charge to add value.
8-inch charge?
Oh, yeah. 8-inch charge. You know, evil sons.
Yeah. It's a good point. But even if they just pull, you know, just said Mega Knobs look cool, they're going in the list. I agree with that because they do look
every
cool.
Every point.
And yep, no matter how they got here, it is a justified spot. I think that the Mega Knobs, again, they do it all. They can support a character. They can come in. If they're off table, they influence what your opponent does. Mm. I believe they also get flamers. And so if flamers go up across the board range wise, then these guys get even worse. I mean, worse, like bad in the good way. They get even better. Am I crazy there?
No, you're not crazy. There's a lot of layers of efficacy you can pump into Mega Knobs to make them work. My mate, I had a mate who, against everybody's better judgment, made Mega Knobs go really well, and he won one event with them, went undefeated at events with them, running like just sometimes 30 Mega Knobs, which is insanity. That was back when you could still blob them up, though. Like, he was blobbing up to like just a table-dominating blob of Mega Knobs.
Irremovable object or immovable object. Yeah.
Man, it's still cool. I wish you could still do that, but I'm happy you can't. Like, it's this weird weighing thing up with me. Like, I was really happy to see stuff like, you know, 30 Mega Knobs just in this big wah blob coming at me. Four inches a turn, so I don't really care that much. But
it was just cool.
Yeah, it was just cool though. But then when they had the looters, that we went up to like 25 unit looters in a blob, the double shot and all that other stuff, you're like, yeah, that's good. It's a good change.
Bit obnoxious. But still, you know, whatever. Meganobs, they're starting to look like they do look cool, and in the context of the orcs they look really cool, but they are starting to look a little short compared to
they're a little bit squat now. In saying that, I think Meganobs being Death Skulls, getting OBSEC on Meganobs is sick. Like, just as like a three man Meganob unit sitting on an objective that's in a non-threatening position. No amount of mortars or Wivens or Thunderfire cannons is going to ship them easily, you know?
That's actually a great point. We were in another chat with some buddies talking about how indirect fire is always going to be good. And let's say the Thunderfire cannon becomes 500 points or something. Then people will just shift to whatever the next cheapest thing is.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. It'll be the Rapier batteries, it'll be the Scorpiuses, it'll be the regular Whirlwinds, things like that. But essentially putting three OBSEC Meganobs, Death Skulls Meganobs on an objective out of line of sight is the same as putting three Custode Guard on that thing. It's to all intents and purposes, unless you're shooting at them as something that takes them to the Custode Guard to the 4+ invuln, you have to be shooting them essentially with a Basilisk to make any difference between shooting at those two models. Except I keep thinking Meganobs are toughness 5. They're not, they're toughness 4. And the Custode Guard is toughness 5, yeah.
Well, you could probably get twice as many in the Custode Guard.
Yeah.
Or not twice.
Sorry, other way. Yeah.
Look at the points, but recently anyway. But so not that you'd ever want to regulate Meganobs to being backfield objectives, but if you came in and mauled somebody's unit that overextended, then you're basically scoring free points for a couple of turns, and you're right, you're basically immune to everything that's not a Basilisk, and even then a Basilisk may not do it.
Well, I wouldn't. If I had two Bassies, maybe. There's no point shooting it and rolling. You roll your two dice, see how many shots you got. You got a 2 and a 3. 3 shots hitting on 4s. I ain't even killing one of these guys.
Yeah. Will a Whirlwind Scorpus, I guess, because it's got the...
In Devastated Auction? Absolutely. Double shooting, winning him on 3s.
But that's never happening. That's never going to happen because the Meganobs are not going to be on turn 1.
They're not going to be on the table turn 1. Well, yeah, they could be. Or they might be in a truck or something like that. And then if you make them waste the first salvo of the Scorpius, then you're sitting pretty.
Yeah. Great points.
What was the next one on this? This one.
Triarch Praetorians.
Hampas to red. Here's your moment, buddy.
So it's more about what they're going to have, right? And this is something for all Necron players to look forward to going into this codex coming out here shortly, is that their weapons are stepping up. Their staves are going to be, we go into 2 damage and everything, and they're really going to be, it's taking them to the next, between them and Lich Guard, right? And I think that's kind of where this is going. I do think that there's applicability in that regard. It's just at this time, they're still, I mean, to be fair, you know, we talked about disruption units, and Necrons have wraiths as disruption units, very similar to the Helldrake in that regard. But they also have, I mean, with the ability to get things around, whether it's through the Deceiver or through Veil of Time relic to pick things up and deep strike them nearby. You know, there's ways to get these units there where they need to do it. I would argue that you know, an on the table unit as it stands right now, and we kind of they phased out of the meta a little bit, but the destroyers, the old destroyers. Now the new destroyers definitely got some stuff going for them, but the old destroyers, just regular destroyers. I mean, that was 24 inches, 3 shots, strength 6, AP -3, D3 damage. You were definitely wasting Space Marines pretty rapidly with those weapons, mm-hmm. for sure. And they're just efficient
with those
weapons. Yeah, I mean, yeah, it was very efficient. I liked it a lot. They did a great job.
And one is it, what's the sweet name of their 1CP stratagem?
Extermination protocols to reroll all hits and wounds, because they naturally only roll reroll one or
hit rolls of 1. Yeah,
hit rolls of 1, and then you bring a destroyer lord, and they're rerolling ones to wound. But then you use extermination protocols, and that one squad was rerolling all hits and wounds, which was pretty baller.
Legitimately, like mostly kill a knight.
Yeah. Oh man, it was great. I mean, and so then you take into effect, I mean, now with the way that CP works, it used to be that Necrons were struggling for CP, but now you got CP for days. I mean, you should be doing extermination protocols, you know, all the time, essentially, which is just not something that was around beforehand. We'll see how the new codex treats them. We'll see what comes.
And so, like, you think about the relevance of that unit still. The fact that destroyers literally were operating like, have been operating at exactly the same level for 18 months or so, possibly even longer. I can't remember when the Necron Codex came out. It came out with the Tau, it was the Tau Necrons and something else. They came out like a month.
Dark Eldar.
Yeah, yeah. They all dropped within a couple of weeks of each other. Yeah, it's funny that they're still operating at this level that's quite respectable. And you can only imagine that if they just got like one more bonus of efficiency, like it's, let's say just a plus one to strength aura from a Canoptic Reanimator or something in a special different, whatever they're called, Forge World or whatever. All of a sudden, that's it. That's the thingy. That's the
so thingy. Close.
All of a sudden, insane. Like insane again. Back to, even though they're still respectable, they would go straight through the ceiling.
Yep, and that's really, I mean, and they've got stuff. I tell you what, I mean, we've seen from the boxes and whatnot and what they've showcased. I mean, Doom Scythes, right? So Doom Scythes have these like death ray cannon deals on them, death yep. rays, that they're going to be, so they're three shots, whereas they used to be D3 shots. They're D3, going yeah. to three shots, and then they're damaged. We're talking strength 10, AP minus 4. Straight 3 plus D3 damage, right? You were talking about Tau last time and that new relic ion cannon that the Riptides yeah. can take. Well, imagine that and then put it on a monolith and give them 4 of them. Yep.
Yeah, that's legit.
Yep, that's going to be scary.
I have a question for you.
Yes.
Why do these guys have tails?
Which ones?
The Triarch.
You talking about their spines?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
They got elongated. I think because they like to plug in, you know, that it's batteries not included. You know,
oh, there you go.
Yeah.
So you know, you remember Avatar where they like plug their hair strain things into it? Well, this is the inverse. They plug their butts into stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I would have taken any answer.
Spines. Yeah. It's their spine.
That's their butt. It's their butt antennas.
I can't reconcycle that. No.
That's too I've ruined it for you now.
Let's take a break on that one and then we'll come back, talk about the charity foundation, and then continue on this list and then have a hobby segment where I nerded out on some documentary stuff. See you in a minute.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
Hey, everybody. We are back. Still got Red and Adam here.
Hello.
Hey.
So, folks, I want to talk about the Nova Open Charitable Foundation. We've had, you know, folks like Dave Taylor on the show in the past to talk about this stuff. They normally have, like, their big end of drive, you know, kind of crescendo event at the Nova Open tournament. But, you know, due to the COVID situation and everything, all events are basically, you know, the large events are basically canceled. And so they can't do that. And so this year, they've chosen to go with a virtual crescendo. And we're going to be a part of helping put that together and host a live streaming event to kind of do a big push for some of the last hours of their drive for selling raffle tickets. And just as a refresher to folks that may not be familiar with it, is that you can go to the website NovaOpenFoundation.org. And if you hover over the banner, you can go to the 2020 raffles and you'll see several different categories: armies, specials, units, detachments, and individual models. Some of these models are painted by absolutely huge name, world-class painters, and you have a shot at taking some of them home for a few dollars. There's a minimum purchase of raffle tickets of $10 on the site. I think that's because of how their back-end system works or whatever. But for $10, you get to support one of these great charities: Fisher House, Breast Cancer Research Foundation, Doctors Without Borders, and you get to take home what is potentially an absolutely amazing art. Could be a whole army, could be an individual model, or you're just kicking in some for a shot at something amazing.
Like, let's speaking candidly here, if you do manage to win one of these armies, it will legitimately be the cheapest and most high quality plastic crack you'll own in your life, unless you're in yourself a world-class painter. Like, there is
So if you go to the individual models, there are Primarchs, Knights, amazing things that you can get 2 tickets for $10. You know, in some of these, some of them are a little bit more expensive, like $8, $10 or whatever. But when I say $8, there you can kick in for a shot at getting an army for eight bucks. I guess. Yeah, well, exactly, you got about right. 2 tickets, so $16. Find the best ratio of odds to price to get your minimum $10 or whatever. It's worthwhile. I mean, I know people that have won things from this. I know folks that have won Titans and models, and you know, look, go and support the artists that you like. Like, look at the list of artists, and we're actually going to have a couple of them on the show, and then of course the live stream when we do it. But look at the artists for this year and find somebody that you follow on YouTube, you know, their tutorials or whatever, and kick in something to support them being a part of this foundation. The whole foundation, I think they're about halfway to the goal that they want to meet for this year, and you support the charities, support the artists, support what they're trying to do here for charity, and you know, maybe just roll the dice on not having to paint a Death Guard army for yourself. Maybe you spend $16 and get a Death Guard army, which are going to be brutally strong after this Marine army one wound thing goes in effect.
Yeah, I agree. I just think it's a fantastic cause, and it's tailored for us. It's tailored for us nerds. Like, what could be better? Like, this is our charity. This is our thing to show that we are not only a community that thinks about each other, but we think about people who don't play this game. We think about the rest of our communities and the people we love and cherish out there who might be struggling at the moment, especially at the moment, you know? So I think this is a fantastic cause.
Yeah, and this is not a hard sell. Like, I believe that if you're not in a position to do it, then don't do it. Just tune in for the live stream and throw us some comments and be supportive that way. And I think that's absolutely awesome. If you can throw in a couple of bucks for a shot at something you might like, might look good on your shelf, you might want to use as a catalyst to start a whole new arm. Like, I don't know. If you can justify it in any way, this is a good cause.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, just the lion's share of this goes directly to the charities. It's always been worthwhile. They've raised a ton of money for charity over the years. I've always felt proud of supporting it. This year, we're supporting it and going to be doing a little bit of lifting on it. But happy, really proud to do
it. We're just going to be doing what we do, mate. We're just going to be chin-wagging about the things we love doing while also contributing to something bigger than ourselves.
Yeah, yeah. So if you want to maybe support this show, you know, do it by kicking in a couple of tickets on this. Yeah, I feel confident saying that. But again, only if you can. I know that times are rough out there for so many people. So again, this is not really a hard sell. I just really want to talk about it and try to translate the fact that I believe in what they're doing.
Well said, mate.
Yeah, thanks. All right, well, let's jump back into our list. We're going down the top 9 Space Marine killers as presented to us in a thought-provoking article on the Warhammer community site. Well, if you caught the first segment, I'm not sure how you ended up here at this part if you didn't catch the first part. But, or maybe you just... I'm not going to tell you how to listen. But if you caught the first part, we're kind of being critical of some of the choices. But number 7 here, they have listed anyone and anything holding a heavy bolter.
Yep.
And
now, why did they say that? What are they alluding to here, gents?
So, you know, right now, heavy bolters, still just kind of heavy bolter-ish, which you have in your mind.
Strength 5, AP minus 1, 1 damage, right? Yeah, 3 shots, heavy profile.
You know, we've got it on the horizon whenever that is coming, that heavy bolters across the board will go to 2 damage.
Yep, that's a big deal.
And 3 shots, now even, let's say, you know, Terminators or whatever go to and Custode. I don't know if we're supposed to be talking about Custodes in the context of Marine killers, but 2 damage on a multi-shot weapon for not a ton of points on a defensible body, something that you can buff either with things like Feel No Pain, cover, you know, potentially leave them out of line of sight so they can't even be shot, put them in a Rhino, put them in a drop pod, Land Raider. Don't take a Land Raider. But Land Raider
Prometheus, if you're lucky enough to have one of those.
So, but you know, having an affordable option, but we're not talking about just Marines. I think they're referring to heavy weapon squads, which they're in a weird spot. I don't know if I can. Well, I don't know if I can endorse heavy weapon squads.
I cannot endorse heavy weapon squads unless they're mortars. I will. Yeah. I can't endorse heavy weapon squads.
But, well, guys don't have to endorse it, but I'm still going to do it.
Doing it anyway.
Because I mean, between with my Tanith project, now I wanted to do missile launchers, which is true to the lore as well. But they've also got heavy bolter teams. I mean, it was Trigon Bragg is one of the renowned characters of the story, and he had a heavy weapon. And it's kind of hard not to imagine some of these guys in that team with that setup. And so I'm going to run some heavy weapons teams, and they're going to have heavy bolters.
Well, you know how I felt about Harker, and he's basically like a one-man heavy weapons team.
Yeah, he sure is.
I don't know if Payback. I hope Payback. Payback is already.
It is. I know it's not a heavy weapon, though, but it is.
Yeah, it's assault, I believe.
Yeah.
I just don't know. I mean, I know it's not a heavy bolter. It's a specific named, but...
Yep. Payback, 36 inches, assault 3, strength 5, AP minus 2, 1 damage.
Right, one now. Damage. Please sprinkle on that 2 damage for it.
That'd be sick. Well, there's a lot of... So a guard do have a lot of access to heavy bolters. Even like you can take double heavy bolter chimeras, you can put triple heavy bolters on your Lehman Russes. Every single artillery piece can have a heavy bolter in the hull. On top of that, every, like you said, every infantry squad can take a heavy bolter. Every veteran squad can take a heavy bolter. Like you can really spam those through there.
They can get the, what is it? Not the tarantulas, although that's one of them. We just talked about it in the last segment.
The rapier batteries?
The rapier quad batteries, yeah.
Yeah, the quad heavy bolter. But don't tell don't tell people about that because they won't. Nah, you don't tell people about that. Because the Marines can take those, and Marines can make them very good.
Yeah,
if they go to 2 damage, like Marines can make them legitimately good. Like because you take them as Imperial Fists, and they get Norse cover as well. And plus one to wound at 2 damage with like what would it be? Their quad, so 12 shots. With strength 5, minus 2 in Dev Doctrine, ignoring cover, well, plus 1 to wound. You just kill vehicles with the thing. You're just like, ah, cool. Yeah.
There's your Valkyries can get heavy bolters. You don't take a Valkyrie either. But
I wish. Seems like every week someone hits me up and just like, Adam, Valkyries, please, tell me there's something there.
They're cool models. I mean, they look really cool on the tabletop.
They're staple guard models.
They're cool in every respect. Except I can't seem to envision a way of making them good. Like take them. I mean,
they're outclassed in every way, and then the rules don't seem to really incentivize you to take them. So maybe that's going to be a model for attention in the future. But they can get heavy bolters.
Yeah, it's true. They tried really hard to make them good. Like they gave them a huge amount of stratagem support in Psychic Awakening in the Militarum Tempestus side of things. Through the, like, I think it was about 3 different stratagems to give them, one of them to give them like a pseudo Thunderfire cannon effect, like if you kill a model. The problem is though, I mean, I think we even joked about this on here, was like the chances of killing a Space Marine with a Valkyrie, not so good. Maybe if they go to strength, you know, sorry, the 2 damage, they will become very respectable. But as of right now, it's just like, sorry, mate.
Yeah, I think the best way for a guard to handle the heavy bolter situation is on Lehman Russes.
Yeah, I think so.
But Chimeras too. I mean, that's a great. I mean, Chimeras.
Yeah, I like them on Chimeras. Double heavy flame or double heavy bolter Chimeras seem decent, especially if they get the 2 damage.
I think they'll get across the board, right? I mean, they've hinted at it. I don't know if it's been like again explicitly stated that everybody's going to get it. But are things like the Dominion squad? Is that the?
Oh yeah, good call.
Yep.
So yeah, Dominions for Sisters, which is something I was planning to talk about later. In my little rant.
I don't want to spoil it, but like Dominions, are Dominions in an emulator just,
yeah,
is that like, you know, the heat-seeking, marine-killing missile?
Well, on top of that, like we talked about the multi-melter changes and things like that. Both of those versions on Dominions are pretty saucy.
Yeah, I know. I think the heavy bolters, yes, anything and anyone holding a heavy bolter is going to be great. But see, if everything goes up in wounds...
Oh, sorry. Did we say Dominions? Yeah. We meant Retributors.
Yes.
Retributors are the heavy
Dominions.
Weapons.
Are Dominions
heavy
the Grey Knights?
Dominions are the special weapon, like ladies. They can take all. Okay. They can take a bunch of melter guns, a bunch of plasma guns. A bunch of flamers and storm bolters, things like that. It's the Retributors can take all the heavy weapons.
There you go. I'm now screwed up the name twice, but I'm glad everyone knew what I meant.
And the Retributors ignore the penalty for moving and shooting already, so they essentially. They can disembark from a vehicle and act like they are the vehicle still.
Bark out some sweet Imperial lead.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Yeah. So jumping to that talk. Oh, no. I'll wait. I'll hold back, Adam.
More,
hold back.
We're going to get to the end of this list and then go into. this is a good choice with the heavy bolters. Absolutely. The next one is the G-Stealer Cult Aberrants. I also like this choice.
I like this choice as well. I mean, I just like the fact that they've put some effort into having these in here. I mean, admittedly, they could have just had a picture of a rock saw, just like no arm attached, just a picture of a rock saw, and it would have been the same thing.
Just because they're on the ground, like a
Yeah, just a rock sword. It has the perfect profile. Gets the strength 8, minus 4, 2 damage. Mwah! Couldn't be more perfect for smashing Primaris Marines to bits. But I like that they chose to go with Aberrants and just be like, hey, we're not going to say that, you know, Acolytes are better than Aberrants at smashing stuff, because that would just be silly. But
the Aberrants have... You can take them in a fat enough unit to where, you know, again, the choice would not have to be made in a vacuum, because they're probably going to live long enough with their damage reduction and... I guess can you blip these guys in?
Yeah, for sure you can.
Yeah. Yeah. So they can live long enough to possibly be able to deliver, dig into assault, do their thing, and then pick up Marines. So for two turns.
They have to come down in points. I don't understand why they went up in points again and again and again and again. Like every time you hear Aberrants, it's because they've gone up in points.
Oh, fair.
It does suck, because they are like the prime awesome keystone unit. They're the Meganobs, they're the aggressors, the Terminators for GSC, and just every time it just seems like they get worse, even though they're still cool. Like I will advocate like maybe taking one medium-sized unit of them, just because you want to make your opponent be like, ugh, I can't push in too deep, I'll get the Aberrant Smash on my face.
No, I mean, you know, we started off talking about the Exocrine and how it's a respectable thing that when you see it on the field, you're like, oh man, I really gotta figure out how I'm going to deal with that. I think the Aberrants present the same problem, the same kind
Absolutely
of sensation.
Right. Yeah, exactly right. I mean, to the right profiles, they're not exceptionally hard to manage, but the fact is you have to have a way of managing them.
Yeah, I agree.
Do you feel that way, though, in a smaller board? I mean, I know we keep going back to that, but I think it's just a huge factor. It's like, how do you manage them? How does the Genestealer Cult player not get them in the right spot?
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, they realistically will get them in a good spot. They'll get them in a threatening spot. But if you're playing appropriately, especially against GSC, unfortunately, who don't have the shooting to clear screens, if you're making an Aberrant unit into anything that's not, like, of the same ilk as Aberrants, like, you make them charge it. An impulsor or something silly like that. You're like, oh, cool. I'll just get out and my bolters are just going to kill your Aberrants. Yeah. Enough bolters will just kill the Aberrants.
Well, you'll get them weakened to where even, you know, if they are just one or two chugging around, they're probably not going to do what the player expected them to do at that point.
Yeah, they're no longer represent that alpha terrifying unit.
Do things like, I guess, the fact that these Aberrants, they get damage reduction, right? It's like they...
Minus one to wound. Sorry, no, minus one damage. Like
minus one damage. So, you know, everyone who's taking their hail of heavy bolters, like the rest of your Genestealer Cult army doesn't care about the damage to stuff because they're only one wound apiece anyway.
Yeah, and Aberrants don't care either because they're minus one damage.
With heavy bolters that they can also take, and that's been actually, that has been the bulk of the chats that I've been in about Genestealer Cults, is like the players are taking some guard. And I know that may be different than you know what folks were winning with before, but they're taking guard. So is them getting better heavy bolters and them being either don't care about everyone else taking heavy bolters, is that enough to kind of bubble them up a little bit?
Yeah, look, you might be onto something there, seeing as they're pretty well placed from a unit point of view, maybe not in a list construction points-wise point of view, just their profile and the things you can do with them. They're still very well placed as a powerful, can kill anything, you can solve any problem in melee unit.
I know we talked about how hand flamers are not getting it done, but
like, we did last year.
Lehman Russes and Aberrants,
yeah,
maybe, and the yeah, cool
maybe
psychic
powers. In heaven. Like you have this imposing wall of toughness 8, and instead of taking Bulgrin, which admittedly like are more survivable and hardy than the Aberrants, they don't actually kill as well, anywhere near as well. And of course, you don't need the meat shield in front of the Lehman Russes because they can shoot in combat, especially if you give them things like heavy flamers if you wanted to. But having the Aberrants held as like a pocket countercharge, that could be sick, because they can literally, with the right buffs, kill anything in the game.
Oh, they're cool looking models too, which is a plus.
Oh, they're sick. They're so sick.
I dig it. All right. Well, here we go. Here's where the gloves come off. Number 9. So, yeah, they've listed Blade Guard veterans. And, you know, the reason I think that they're on this list, and I guess it even says this in their description here, is they've got the damage to power swords, and they've got an invulnerable save.
Yeah. Yep. And on top of that, they got is it a 1+ armor save, or is it a 2+ armor save?
2+ armor save.
Yeah, 2+.
The shield now, you know, goes to 4+ invulnerable save, and then a +1 to their armor save. So 2+ armor save, 4+ invulnerable. It is survivable. They're a 3-man unit, but they've got that relic blade, which is super choppy.
And they've got that third wound, which means they're resilient against the 2 damage themselves.
Yeah, I do think listing Marines to kill Marines is not what people want to see.
I mean, I was saying before that I could do an entire top 10 list of Marine units that are good at killing Marines. Because admittedly, Marines are really good at messing Marines up.
Yeah.
I could list off five.
Well, Marines are good
at
killing everything.
That's right.
They're great. Look, they look cool. Mm. I'm not saying anything about it. They're awesome. But what are some other things that could have been in this slot that have not been represented in anywhere else in this list and are, most importantly, not Marines?
So I was thinking, you know, like you brought up, we talked about last time, I would build off your towel rant before you get to go into your next one, Adam, is, you know, the relic ion cannon Riptide at 3 damage plus, you know, plus D3. I mean, that's removing Gravis Marines, right?
Exactly.
And then when you go to the heavy burst cannon, that one's still not bad. I think that Marines have some management, some mitigation that they can work towards that, but it's still not bad. I mean, still enough. But the next part being the breachers, right? Breachers have the ability, that stratagem they can use to extend their range at the full profile, where that's strength 6, AP minus 2, 2 damage. I think I've got that right. And that's pretty serious for that. And so there was that one. And then, you know, we were talking about it, and I feel like we kind of talked around it. We were all these 2 damage. I mean, a Knight's Avenger cannon. How many times have we not seen a Knight, whether it's the Avenger cannon or the plasma cannon that the Castellan has, one of those two weapons just picks up Marines, right?
Yeah.
I know Knights are not as they might suffer a little bit in some of the 9th edition mission construction, but a Knight could still very much be a very good weapon profile or weapon support platform.
Yeah, well, it you encapsulate, let's say you got a Knight Crusader, and either with the relic battle with the battle cannon or the thermal cannon, they're both of middling relevance to them, but the Avenger Gatling cannon, and then like what's the carapace mounted weapon that's strength 5 minus 1 2 damage, no line of sight. There's a bunch of different weapons you can put on a Knight that'll all be relevant, including the stompy feet. Wounding him on 2s, taking him to a 5 plus, and then D3 damage, really 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 good. That, like, everything on a Knight is good at killing Marines, with the exception of like heavy stubbers and such, of course.
Sure. Yeah, so that's kind of where I was thinking, but I know you've got a good one too, which is going to build into next part.
Yeah, well, so my one's Repentia. So Repentia sit in this lovely little spot where they've got their special eviscerator, yeah? And you go to the app, guys. I know you guys had it for me a second ago, but they've got a special named, what's it called? The super chainsword?
Penitent Eviscerator.
I like mine better. Super chainsword. It's cool.
That's fair.
Eviscerator. But yeah, that's times 2 strength. Is it minus 3 or minus 4 and flat 2 damage?
Minus 3, 2 damage.
Minus 3. I seem to remember the regular Eviscerator being minus 4, but it is minus 1 to hit. Now, what's saucy about them is that they have Zealot, so they got rerolls to hit in on the charge and in combat as well. So the minus 1 to hit doesn't really make any difference. And so Repentia, I believe, could have easily taken the spot of the Blade Guard, because they are a melee unit. They have, that is not a Space Marine, so it wouldn't be, as Paul said, a little bit of a cop-out. They've got the strength that matters, they've got the rend that matters, they've got the damage that matters, they have the amount of attacks that matter, and they've actually got a very little and unbeheld amount of durability for essentially what is like a mostly naked model. They've got...
You have a fatter unit, you're not limited to 3. I believe they have better movement, or at least not worse movement.
They move 6 inches.
You can give them a bunch of pluses to charge and advance and things like that.
Yep.
They have a awful lot of attacks.
Oh, you mentioned the durability. So I think that was one of the main things that you may be kind of thinking, oh, no, they're not an equivalent choice. But so they have the Shield of Faith.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So Inherit come with the 6+ involved. They have essentially a 5+ feel no pain already, a standard. Now, as we know with Sisters, there's a lot of janky ways to make these seemingly not so durable units quite durable, and with the right amount of buffs, and it is quite a considerable amount of buffs, you can get these guys to a 4+ invulnerable save. And so that's this exactly the same invulnerable save as the Blade Guard veterans. On top of that, they actually have a feel no pain as well. Admittedly, they are one wound. Sorry, they're two wounds. Like tripping.
They're
toughness 3.
Yeah, Sister the Repentia are only one wound.
What am I thinking about with the two wounds? Never mind. I mean, it might be the little character they get. Repentia Superior, whatever it is.
So a 10-man squad's only one more wound, but you get a bigger footprint, you got more attacks. Yeah, there's you're not trading off much, I don't think.
The Repentia Superior, she's 4 wounds.
There you go. Maybe that's what I'm thinking of. But yeah, and look, they're pretty inexpensive, aren't they? Anybody?
15 points per model.
And how much is a Blade Guard? Probably around somewhere in the high 20s.
It's more than that.
I'm going to have a punt. I'm going to say 27.
That's what you're going with?
I'm going with 27. Paul, what's your punt?
Ooh. 33 points apiece.
Ooh, all right. Well, I'm looking at it, so I'm going to tell you that you're wrong, Adam. It's 35 points per model.
Damn!
Yes.
Good try. you get two Repentia for every Blade Guard vet.
Yep.
Good job, Paul. You win this round. See, I was thinking they're more broke than they are. Like, they are pretty powerful.
You want to know who the real winner was, Adam?
The children? No,
the app. The app was the real winner.
We're getting so much freaking mileage out of this.
I know. I'm sorry.
No, it's a homage to Ricky.
It is. He deserves it.
Last King of Gondor.
We're talking about durability on the tabletop, and you can buff up their invulnerable state. That's where we're eventually going with it.
Yeah.
Yes.
And Celestine's one of the ones that buffs their vulnerable save, and like you kind of want to take Celestine.
Aren't you? I mean, I don't know if she's making it into every list, but I think you kind of want to take her anyway.
But you're never going to feel like that. She doesn't make it into every list, but if she is in your list, you're never going to feel bad. You're never going to be like, oh, those are wasted points.
Yeah, it doesn't happen.
You know? Yeah. It's like, this is a sick model. It's going to do some awesome stuff for me. And even if it's not like the perfect thing for this situation, you're never going to be sad.
That's right. Yeah. No, especially with. She looks good. She plays well. I mean, she's got a lot going on for her. She makes the army in general just that much better. It's pretty stellar. And to take these Repentia and bring them. So she adds one, and then it was a warlord trait that added the other. And there might be other means.
Yeah, I don't think those are the only ways. I think there's at least one more way to get the plus one. And this is my unfamiliarity with the sisters, so I apologize in advance. But I think there's a couple of different ways. That's why it has all this language in here, you know, XXX to a maximum of 4+.
Right.
I think there's another way, but warlord trait and then Celestine and their models within 6. And so you can create this kind of assault bubble rolling up the tabletop with some pretty impressive attacks, like with the penitent eviscerator. Is that what it's called?
Yep,
super chainsword.
Yep. Super chainsword.
super chainsword.
Yeah.
Love it.
That puts out, you know, a really good minus. You don't care about the neg to hit, and you're chewing up Space Marines for half the cost of the Blade Guard.
You're chewing up most of anything, really.
Fair point. So that's it. I think there are other things in there if you're looking for anti-Marine. I think you might have to dig a little deep, but they're in their list in some interesting places.
Yeah, and I think we've done a good job of encapsulating all the non-marine killing stuff. We're giving a little bit of love to everything, really, which I like.
Yeah, and you know, look, we did kind of come about this as like how ridiculous this list is, but again, it's thought provoking and it's interesting. It's been a nice rundown. So glad they put the article up for us to do this with.
Well, realistically, the only one that was in there that we thought shouldn't be in there was the Helldrake.
Yeah.
Like the other ones, they're all, you know, they're all respectable. You can get you get the idea behind them. And admittedly, like there is like 1,000 other things I could have put in instead of the Blade Guard, but hey, they might have just had a nice picture that day and be like, well, I like this Blade Guard guy, he looks handsome, chucking him in.
Well, and then the Marine still, there's a lot of variety in it. Like are those Space Wolf Blade Guard? Because
yeah.
I've seen some really cool conversions, kit bashes and stuff of those. Mm.
Yeah. And they are the Emperor's Executioners. They go around killing other Space Marines.
That's it. So okay. I know we've done a lot of kind of a preamble to this, but
I've locked and loaded the gun is loaded. I'm ready to fire on the sisters.
Let's fade to the back here and hear what you got about the sisters.
All right, sisters, really in a weird spot at the moment where they've got this amazing toolbox codex, but it is admittedly less powerful and takes more work to get the most out of it relative to things like Space Marines, which is a well-rounded codex. So you don't have to work all that much to get a lot out of it. You really have to know your stuff and you really have to be on the ball to make sisters go. But they have an amazing array of really unique, really flavorful stuff. First one I'll touch on briefly because I will honestly say there is so much. I could talk about this single model for half a freaking hour about the things it can do and bring to the table for you and the unique ways it functions and operates in your army as well as it debuffs your opponent. The Triumph of St. Catherine. I'm never going to own one. The thing will turn into sand in my fingers the second I pick it up. I'm clumsy. I used to break ogre models, for God's sake. The Triumph of St. Catherine. That is an incredible model. It's beautiful. It brings so much to the table. You get extra miracle dice. It shoots decently. It's got a bunch of pistols. It fights pretty well. It's got a big base, meaning it has a huge aura for all the things it puts out. On top of that, a lot of people really struggle to handle it because there's really no point in shooting unless you're going to kill it. And it's got like 18 wounds with a 4+ invul. It's actually really, really rough. People look at it and be like, oh yeah, just some boulders will take it down. They are wrong. So wrong. On top of that, it functions as being under the wound threshold, so you can hide it behind stuff, which brings me to this second little bit of tech that they've got that is really unique. And they've got this Bastion. They've got the Battle Sanctum. It's 50 freaking points for a terrain piece that's essentially a three-story ruin. It's huge. It's obscure, and you can hide where they want behind it. It's only 50 points. Admittedly, it is big, so it's difficult to put onto the table at the moment, seeing as you have to be 3 inches away from everything. But let's say you are facing a Tau gun line, yeah? And, you know, they made you take the crappier deployment side, and you're like, well, bad luck, buddy. I got my 50-point Sanctum, and I just blocked your best line of sight. And then you get this really good pivot point to pivot out of to stage all your infantry behind and work your way through into those midboard objectives. I think it's incredibly powerful that they get just the chance to just take essentially what, like, the best sized and heighted ruin for 50 points. You can just guarantee you're going to take it. It's going to be on the board when you need it. And even if, let's say you can't deploy it, it's 50 points. It's not going to break your brain if you don't get to use it one game out of six at a GT, like, because the terrain is too good already that you don't get to use it. You know, it's not going to break your heart. On top of that, it gives you a miracle dice as well. And it's breachable, heavy cover, light cover, scalable. It's all those good things, all the right keywords for you to get the most out of it. Next one, Retributor Squads. We talked about them before. The three weapons they can take, Heavy Bolters, Multi-Melters, Flamers, are all getting buffed. They're getting three levels of buffs. No matter which one you take with those, it's going to be good. 12-inch Heavy Flamers on them, incredible, coming out to clear off objectives from a Rhino. Multi-Melters getting two shots each. Take that and and multiply the damage you can get out of that for the double shots with the Miracle Dice efficiency you can get from them with things like the Simulacrum. You can get the double Miracle Dice out of them, stuff like that. You can get so much juicy work done with that unit. We've already talked about the Repentia. Don't need to go there again. Exorcists, I still think they're quite respectable. I think for the same reason that Lehman Russes are, having a stable back line, forward line, whatever line you want of this toughness 8 wall in the front when you need it to stage your OBSEC behind, or in the backboard, sitting and hunking down in objectives, zoning off oppositions, and adding resiliency plus reliable firepower, really good idea. Seraphim and Zeraphim. I'm not quite sure how I feel about these, but for things like Scramblers, guaranteeing you will get points game in, game out, turn in, turn out, I think they're fantastic. They're a little overcosted, admittedly. I hope they do come down in the future, but I think they're really well pointed. They're poorly pointed, but in a really good spot for what they bring. Now we're going to go talk about Battle Sisters for a second. Battle freaking Sisters are one of, I think, the best troop choices in the game. Like, for a moment, take away the incredible things you can do with stratagem support and all the different layers of buffs you can chuck on, say, Plague Marines and Intercessors and things like that. If you just take an order of Sisters and then just take your Sisters, your Battle Sisters, they're phenomenal. Just boil it down to that vacuum. Hey, they ignore Rend 2, or they have a great invuln save from a couple of other synergies. They hit better in combat. Admittedly, not that good, but the right kind of good that you need to smash through off objectives. If 10 guardsmen are on objective and 5 sisters come into the bloody rows, they're going to wreck them, especially if they get to shoot their bolters before they go in. They're going to absolutely ruin that, and they're going to take and hold objectives really well. On top of that, having an army that has this functioning OBSEC that is the middle zone of flexibility. You're towing the line between, do I have to kill these guys or can I ignore them? And if you can walk that line fine enough with Battle Sisters that your opponent doesn't start eating into them until turn 3, you can just win a game just off the fact they didn't know whether they needed to kill them or not. And I think they just tow this awesome line. On top of that, the same three awesome weapons that I talked about being able to take by the Retributors, you can do the same thing with Battle Sisters. The Multi-Melters, so you can get some great mileage out of your Miracle Dice. On top of that, going to two shots with them, fan-freaking-tastic. On top of the other special weapons they can take, I think there is a hell of a lot to be excited about for Sisters. I think it's all ahead of them. I think all their special characters have play. All of them. Doesn't matter which one. They've all got to play. They've all got something that they can do. You can make a smash cannonist that will literally terrify Marines as well. If I could put a second one in instead of the Blade Guard, it would be the smash cannonist with the Relic Sword. She is absolutely terrifying. And I think that it's so underestimated as a character that can literally be such a problem solver for your army. So yeah, that'll wrap up my Sisters. Get excited about Sisters, guys. I think Sisters in the right hands are right up there with some of the best, but you do have to work for your meal.
With that comment about they have nothing but good times ahead of them. Mm. Not that they can't make some stuff out of what you're talking about now, but like they're going to get some improvements by the nature of these other weapons just getting better and some adjustments maybe along the way, other stuff. And you're right. Every single one of the HQ and then the character elite shot slots, that kind of stuff, they're all functional. They all do something.
Yeah. There's a list where you can get value out of all of them.
Yeah, and I have to make a slight correction to something I said earlier. There are things that give an innate plus one to the invulnerable save, and that's Seraphim and the Zeraphim squad. So the non-squad specific stuff, I think we hit that to get the Repentia to their 4+, but mm-hmm. the limiters are in place for the Zeraphim, I think it's Seraphim squad, which you're going to get at least a 5+ on those guys, those folks right out of the box, which is good. I love the Zeraphim. Like you mentioned, the points may be a little off, but I think what they bring to the table are really strong.
I'm just so super keen on the Battle Sanctum. I think every Sisters player should have the Battle Sanctum on their army list roster. And like let's say for sake of it, you go to a tournament that has stupendously good terrain, and you don't get to deploy it. It's 50 points. It's not going to break your heart not getting to use it. You know, you're just going to be like, oh well, cool. The terrain is so good, I don't need the terrain piece that I brought.
Yeah, again, and at the start of each battle round, if there are any Adeptus Minotaurum units from your army within 6 inches of any Battle Sanctum, you gain a Miracle Die.
Just get a Miracle Dice, and you're going to have people on it, because guess what? Your home objective, you're just going to chuck a Battle Sanctum on it if you can.
Yeah, and then you're just going to add one to your leadership, which is with meaningful morale phases.
Yeah. So theoretically, you could have like 20 Sisters that are -2 to the Ren sitting out of line of sight in cover that are, you know, and so I could shoot you with a Manticore. Yeah, a full payload Manticore that is strength 10, -2, +3 damage, and not kill a Sister because you got a 2+ save in cover. You know, that stuff is insanity. So good. Thunderfire cannons have nothing that can smash through that, unless they got Ignore's cover being Imperial Fist. You're still getting 3+ saves. Like, how can that ever be a bad thing? But yeah, that's hopefully that rant was legible. Maybe you might want to clip it out and watch it and listen to it at half speed. I tend to fire off the words per minute.
I think most people listen to us at double speed. They may not even hear that. It could just be like the chipmunks.
Sisters, Repentia. Yeah, fair enough. That's where I'm at with them. I think there's just so much exciting stuff for them. The fact that they can do mechanized lists, they can do infantry lists, they can do all sorts. They got the best variety going. But yeah, you do have to work a lot harder than some other armies, but all the tools are there.
Man, yeah, thanks for sharing that. I think that's a cool segment. We'll do that every other week or so. But let us know in the comments what we know what you want to hear something. Yeah, I think it's fun.
Yeah, well, everyone seemed to like the Tau one a bit more than I thought. So hopefully that one is just as interesting. And if you do want me to do another one, chuck some stuff in the comments, and whichever faction gets enough traction, I'll see if I can put together a couple of minutes on.
Before we get to the hobby segment, I'm going to put the Nova Open Charitable Foundation link in the show notes. It's novaopenfoundation.org. There's truly some impressive things up there for raffle by some world-class artists.
And
it's worth it just to roll the dice on maybe picking up one of these things just as a showpiece, or heck, get the amazing model, rebase it to look like whatever you want it to match your army, and no one's going to know that it's painted by somebody else because it looks freaking amazing. But it'll blend in with the rest of your army and you feel good about using it.
That's right.
Yeah, man, please check it out. I'll talk about it again because we're actually going to have some artist segments and other segments on the show for next week. And I'll try to get that out before we do our live stream. So you hear about Get This Some Enthusiasm, come check us out on the live stream. Support us any way you can. Comments in the chat, just clicking a like, getting some raffle tickets if you're in a position to do so. Thanks for listening to me and indulging me on that. The finishing move segment. I know we've been kind of, somewhat random with our hobby section, but I've been sucked down the rabbit hole of like Netflix and Amazon Prime documentaries the last couple of days.
Sick.
Yeah, so I've been taking a couple days off work, and, you know, what better to use it? What did I watch first? I watched a documentary on Chris Claremont's run at writing X-Men comics. This was on Amazon Prime. I loved it. I'm a huge X-Men fan, and I actually learned a couple of things that I didn't know. And it was just fun watching him and the editors talk, and editors from Marvel's past, and whatever. If you like the X-Men, you know Chris Claremont. You probably know who Chris Claremont is. And it was awesome. So then it said, well, okay, you just watched that. Would you like to watch the Art of Dungeons and Dragons documentary?
Yes.
Yes, of course I would. A long time, multi-decade spanning gamer, looking at all those second edition, original, first edition type books. And then you see, they were talking to the artist about how it was and how they got their artist and what the environment was like and what TSR was like back then. And, you know, you see pictures pop up on the screen and it like provokes this like visceral memory of where you were when you first saw that picture or when you battled it or whatever. And one of the cool takeaways from that is that, you know, they borrowed a lot of things from legend and lore and stuff that there had never been a picture of. And just the fact and the nature of D&D meant that they had to create all of these pictures of things. And even, you know, even create some own things, beholders, mind flayers, you know, that kind of stuff.
Mm.
Great documentary. But then after that, it was, would you like to watch a documentary on fantasy oil painting, part one? I'm like, oh, in for a penny, in for a pound, you know?
Love it.
Sign me up. So I click on this and, you know, it brings up that first, you know, some information about, you know, what you're about to click. It's the part one is 3 hours long.
Jeez.
And I thought it was going to be like similar to the documentaries that I've seen before, like almost like a montage, you know, where they cut to different snippets of interviews and, you know, edit in relevant topics of people talking about things and how it, you know, it all kind of comes together and follows a somewhat linear path, even though, you know, all these interviews are conducted individually, separately from each other. It's not. This is like one man. I kind of zoned out at the beginning. I was doing something else. And then we got sucked in to this dude talking about an hour deep of color theory and how he's painting this World of Warcraft Blizzard style orc. And he does this color. I'm doing a terrible job of explaining. He does this like color exploration where he brings it in. He draws it and then draws it digitally and figures out what he wants the colors to be. And he went into this study about how to make something look vibrant. You know, we talk about contrasting colors all the time, but he talks about the ratio of those contrasting colors on the medium and why you would choose certain ones and which shades of which ones you would choose and why you would choose it. This is an hour of this 3 hours is just pretty much on color theory. I mean, he is skipping no steps and talking about how he's going to eventually make this oil painting of this, you know, production qualities, you know, worldwide production quality piece of art. And I found it to be somewhat, I'm not all the way through, I'm 90% through part one of this, but I've been interested in the process. This guy goes through and skips, you know, again, absolutely no steps about how he creates this. But what I'm liking about the fact that he's skipping no steps and showing you all the process is that he's explaining it in explicit detail about why he's doing this. And that's what you miss, I think, from some tutorials out there. I don't know that you want to invest 3 hours into part one of this. I don't even know that I'm endorsing that. But if you have the time and you have the Amazon, the Prime account, and you can watch it for free, I think the color theory part was pretty eye-opening. And this is somebody like I understand color theory, or at least I understand enough about color theory to put some stuff on a model. But he goes 2, 3, 4, 5 levels beyond what I've ever seen in a tutorial in our hobby that I would have sat through. And I think it's worth listening to just for his concepts of the ratios of things to make things look the way you want them to look.
What's it called again? Sorry.
Oh, I'm going to butcher the name. It's fantasy oil painting, the art of fantasy oil painting, volume one or part one. I will try to look for it and put that in the show notes as well. But the guy, he explains things. I mean, it seems to be, I don't know if it's filmed by somebody else or he's filming himself or whatever, but I mean, he goes through his entire creative process of how to bring this thing to life. And maybe that doesn't apply necessarily to miniature painting, but the colors and where the application of the colors definitely does. And if you're interested in painting in oils, I mean, I know oil painting has kind of different, you know, it has peaks and valleys about the interest in our particular hobby, but how he works with them, he goes into how he sets up his palette, how he sets up his paint palette, his working palette, where he puts the paint. So economy of motion while he's doing this. I mean, again, he skips no steps. If you weren't aware, you're listening to a podcast and I'm a giant nerd. I don't want to break the fourth wall.
Shook. I'm shook by this revelation.
I don't want to take anybody out of the moment, but I found myself, like, I don't know, weirdly fascinated by the process, and I'm going to finish it. I'm going to look for part two.
Nice.
Yeah. So that's it. Like, the
what an awesome rabbit hole.
It was weird. I mean, again, you know, learn some stuff about everything that I happened to watch, which is why, I guess, why you watch these things. But, you know, especially some of the, like, the X-Men stuff, like, that's existed for, you know what, a ton of years.
Yeah.
60 years, almost 60 years. And Claremont started his run, you know, 50 years ago or whatever. A fun few days, and the color theory thing. I don't know, it's got me thinking, like, how do I apply that for my next model? You know, how do I go, what ratios do I put the yellow on my Blood Angel? First time said it today, or at least on this show.
Did we just go an hour and 20 minutes or so without a mention of Blood Angels?
Yeah, we did. I know.
Wow.
I know. But see, when I'm putting my yellows on the next model, how much yellows do I put is going to be influenced by this thought, you know? So
yeah,
I think it means I put more on, but it depends on what look I want to go for.
Well, obviously.
Yeah.
Put more on.
Yeah, that's, I think that's it. So that's what I got this week. And I know I'm spacing on the name. It's got this way. You would never, ever click on it, I don't think, unless you had the same journey that I had.
Yeah.
But I will try to find the full name and put it in the show notes.
I love that stuff. I love learning stuff when you didn't think you were.
Yeah. And if you didn't know, we have show notes, and you should check out the cool new website.
Outrageous. It's like we're a real show or something. It's like we've been doing this for a while.
ForgeNarrative.net. Check it out. Like, share, and subscribe.
Only if you like us, though. If you don't like us, like...
Oh, no, please. That's not a prerequisite. You can still do all that. Well, gentlemen, thank you for joining me. Thank you for listening as well.
No problems. Happy to be here.
Thanks for having us.
All right, thanks for all the support, guys. It's been fun.
Yeah, next week is going to be a big week for us. So still going to put out a show. Show's coming out every week. And then we're going to be doing that stuff for the Charitable Foundation, and really looking forward to it. It's going to be fun. Like, if you tuned in to us for coverage of the LVO and Stat Center, you know, we're not covering a tournament, but we're going to try to keep the enthusiasm running high. We're going to have some special guests. We're going to have some special things that happen exclusive during that broadcast. And we're going to have some pre-made videos from cool folks around our hobby that may not be able to join us at that exact moment. So it's going to be worth tuning in. Even if you can only tune in for a while, I think it's going to be fun. And of course, you know, show's coming out as well next week.
Damn straight.
Guys, we'll see y'all real soon.
See you then.
Handle the truth.